I tried Star Trek Bridge Crew this week, and this could be the game to get people into having VR in their home. Plus, the world's first MMO is relaunched this weekend for the Commodore 64. Tonight is June 4th, 2017, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Ake Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And What Up G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash. Later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
In honor of this being episode 573, I am old. All of the music breaks that you will not be able to hear on the podcast are all Konami songs, because 573 is the Konami number. They're all Konami Bimani songs that you did not dance or DJ to, because they made a whole bunch of other music games that had nothing to do with dancing or DJing. And if you're here live, you'd be able to hear them. But they're not going to be on the podcast. But the rest of this will. Hello, and welcome to the we're not going to talk about Konami at all other than that edition of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as reminisce about gaming's history, which we're going to do a little bit tonight. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on the Voice of Geeks Network, welcome. Head on over to our chat room, live.vognetwork.com. I'll be trying to read intelligent comments from chat. And if you're logged into the site, you can check in, just like Tiger Claw and Dark Tetsuya, who checked in at some point during the intro to the show. They got some points on the June leaderboard. And if you're listening on the podcast feed, you can listen for a passphrase to rudely interrupt the show that you can then put in throughout the next week. A little bit later on, I am going to be opening up our Skype line and our toll-free number for you to call in. Skype line is Bobby Blackwell Show, that is all one word, or toll-free in North America, 1-888-36-GAME-1. Or you can comment on the episode over at vognetwork.com. So this weekend, this coming weekend, which probably by the time this podcast comes out, you missed it. Sorry. June 9th through 11th, the Southern Fried Game Room Expo. This is the last time you'll get to hear me promote it, because this is the last episode before it. The Southern Fried Game Room Expo is going on here in the Atlanta area at the Cobb Galleria Center and Renaissance Waverly Hotel. Arcades, pinball games, all on free play. Console games, tabletop games, a lot of stuff. Great stuff. Panels. David Crane from Activision is going to be there. Billy Mitchell, the video game player of the century. Walter Day, best video game referee ever. They're all going to be there. They're featured. I'm going to be there. The Voice of Geeks Network is a title sponsor, which got us a nice shout-out on the Game Room Junkies podcast. We're going to be there. I'm going to be hosting several panels. We're still working out what panels they're going to be. They're trying to get me to do one Saturday morning at 10 a.m. I'm like, you know, it's a little bit early. Saturday morning at 10 a.m. I am going to be doing a panel on Friday night with John Jacobson, the YouTube sensation from John's Arcade, also the host of the podcast Arcade Outsiders and Video Game Outsiders. So I'm going to run his life for another hour. I used to run his life for an hour at a time in the past. We'll probably talk about that on the panel. But most people there know him as John's Arcade, doing stuff with the Fun Spot Arcade up in New Hampshire and things like that. But he does arcade restorations on his YouTube channel, as well as being a video game podcaster, an arcade podcaster. And he's a Twitch streamer now, too. He sucks at video games and plays them on Twitch. I've got that one. Our friends at Futurus, who used to be ATL VR with the Atlanta Virtual Reality Meetups, I am moderating their panel again, which they really don't need moderation. It's just an hour for me to be on stage with them and talk about the latest things in VR. And I think there's a couple others, like about indie games and stuff. I'm going to have to actually look and see what they actually put me on. They just sent out like the Google Doc. Other than that, I'm going to be there playing games and maybe playing some Artemis and stuff like that. So there's going to be a lot of good games. They're great games there, because they're a lot of games from the past, a lot of games from the present, too, because they are going to have, you know, new pinball machines. I don't know what the Stern Pinball usually releases one new table a year, and they bring it with them to Southern Fried Game Room Expo. So I'll get to see what this year's. Last year's, it was based on the new Ghostbusters movie. Like the year before, it was based on WrestleMania. They did one based on like the new Star Trek movie a couple years back. So they take the properties and make pinball tables out of them. So I'll see what the new one is. And a lot of our friends that we've interviewed on the show before, Project Pinball Charity is going to be there. And a lot of other people that are kind of in the retro gaming scene will be there. It's going to be great. Concerts. There is like some wrestling both nights or something, but I'm not doing anything with the wrestling stuff. They can have the wrestling. Southern Fright Game Room Expo.com, I believe. It's you're going to Google it. It's a very long URL. It is going to be, I think, $65 for all 3 days at the door, or it's $30 on Friday and Saturday and $25 on Sunday for adults. Once you're in, and it's a free play on all the games except for like the one pinball table that the Project Pinball Charity does. That one you have to pay $5, but it all goes to charity. And Rob also says, also less than 90 days to Dragon Con. It's coming up so quick. Yes, less than 90 days to Dragon Con, the VOG suite will be making a return. We are plotting and scheming and about what we're going to do at Dragon Con. We should be participating a little bit more in the podcasting track. This year, there's been a little tiny bit change, like not really like removal of anybody, but like the leadership structure's kind of changed around in the track. So it's going to be nice. We're probably going to be featured more than just one panel this year at Dragon Con. So if you're going to be at Dragon Con in Atlanta, we will be there and we're going to have the suite and everything. Come join us at Dragon Con. Kaijudo says in chat, Star Trek Bridge Crew is life. And that's what I'm going to talk about first, because that's the big VR game that came out this week on all the VR platforms, and I did get a chance to play it on Tuesday. I know, like, because you'll hear me talk about Artemis, and I've talked about Artemis multiple times on the show, especially because I know the someone who actually he runs a company now, a kind of a side business, doing Artemis rooms at conventions at like MomoCon or Southern Fried Game Room Expo or Dragon Con. He even put a blog post on his site about how Artemis is going to be so much better than whatever Star Trek Bridge Crew is going to be because you're in person. And even I kind of said that, and you can actually find tweets that I made just last weekend at MomoCon. I'm like, hey, Artemis is here. It's like Star Trek Bridge Crew, but better. Realize I had not played Star Trek Bridge Crew. And I was just like, you know, saying, okay, well, it's Ubisoft. They're taking an existing thing and just shoehorning it in VR. Obviously, playing in the same room with everybody is going to be objectively better. And so I was like, you know, Artemis is still the king. And everybody should play Artemis. Then Tuesday came along. And I picked it up. I bought it on Steam. And it's $50. It's from Ubisoft, so it is considered a AAA title. I bought it on Steam, which means I can play it on either my Vive or my Oculus Rift. I played it on my HTC Vive because the tracking in my room is a little bit better, especially for what this game is trying to do. So Star Trek Bridge Crew, this is the Star Trek game people have been waiting for. And to be honest, you don't even really need to be a big fan of Star Trek to enjoy this. So what Star Trek Bridge Crew is, I'm going to explain the main part of the game, which is the multiplayer part of the game. You can play this game single player. You do not need to go online to play this game and experience everything in the game. I will talk about the single player after I talk about the multiplayer, because it was designed as a multiplayer game. So I'm going to talk about how it's designed. In this game, there are five people playing, and it's all cooperative right now. And everybody is on the bridge of a starship. And I cannot remember, like, I really should have written down what the name of the starship that you're on in the missions. It actually has a story mode. There is a prologue and five chapters. And I can't remember. It starts with an A. And hopefully, like, I don't know if, like, Kaijudo in chat can, like, just say, you know, yell out what the starship name is. The Aegis. Thank you, Dungeon Buster. The ship is the Aegis. So you're on the USS Aegis in the actual story mode. And you're going through standard Star Trek things. There is a procedurally generated mode where it creates a different mission each time. And on that one, you can either be on the Aegis or on the original series Enterprise. So they do have two different bridges, but the story mode centers around the Aegis. So basically, there are five players on this. Either they're all bots or none of them are bots. So if you're playing online, you need five people. It's four people, right? Ah, Jesus. You have the captain. It's a four-player game. Sorry. I thought there were four people plus captain. That's Artemis. I'm so sorry. Four players. So you have to have four players. One person is the captain. One person is your helmsman, so he drives. The other person is your tactical, so he shoots things. And the other person is your engineering. And he basically makes the ship run and fixes the ship. Each person has their own displays and things like that. And just like in Artemis, the captain can't really do anything but bark orders. He can manipulate, like, screens. He can see screens. He sees, like, a dumbed-down version of what, like, engineering sees, so he can get an overview. But if he wants to get more information, you actually have to speak up and talk to your engineering person. And they have to go and find it. Now, how do you play the game? So let's say you're one of those people. The way the game is played is strictly through your hand movements. So there is no joysticks or anything that you need to have. So, like, if you had the Oculus Touch controllers, you don't really need to use the thumbsticks that are on there, the buttons. Basically, you just have your fingers, your hands, and you're basically just touching these flat panels. And basically, you touch something, and then you pull the trigger, which also I'm assuming on the PlayStation Move controllers is the same way. And that's how you interact with things. And that's even how you fly the ship. You're basically just moving a mouse around. That's the thing about, you know, and so you're trying to do that, and, you know, you can use both hands to do that. And you have little holograms that you can call up in front of you, but basically you have your little area, and that's all you can see. And you can look around at other people, and you can see them, and you can point at them or shake your fist at them, and they'll see it on their thing, and the chairs will swivel if you turn around all the way, and things like that. You're basically going through these scenarios and trying not to die. The prologue, and Tiger Claw said, I watched a little of my playthrough because I streamed on Twitch, the single player. Didn't watch all of it, but I believe he played the Kobayashi Maru scenario, which is from Star Trek 2, I want to say. I mean, they've referenced this in multiple things, but I think it first showed up in Star Trek 2. And that's the prologue. So that's like the spoiler alert. That's the prologue of the story. They throw you right into that. It's basically, and you're basically going through these scenarios. So you can either go through scenarios, there's a prologue and five chapters, and you would make decisions, so you could solve them in different ways, or you can go through procedurally generated missions, where just random things will happen to you for about 45 minutes. And I think that's where the game is going to, you know, have its staying power, because they've got a bunch of scenarios that they can just randomly put up. And you can have, like, escort missions or science missions or military missions, anything like that. Your online experience is going to be very much based on who else you can get in there. And I really only got to play the first night, so everybody was still kind of learning the game, which was kind of nice. But you can sometimes have captains that will micromanage. Watched a couple streams where somebody's like, okay, engineering, you need to put this at 2, this at 1, this at 1. Which is like, okay, well, the engineering guy's really not playing because he's just, like, pressing buttons. But it is really more about the role-playing aspect if you want to go down that route. And people are even talking in chat over at live.vognetwork.com. Dungeon Bus said, in one stream, everyone was blaming the red shirt guy who always got stood behind engineering. They would turn all at once and point at them. We would point at each other, too. Now, what's kind of interesting is when I played online, I didn't stream it. But it turns out our captain was streaming on Twitch because he would actually bring up and start talking to Twitch chat in between things. And that is one thing. The reason I haven't really streamed online is because I can't really interact with chat because I haven't figured out how to mute just the game and let the people on stream. Because I don't want to like have the other three people listen to me, you know, thanking people for follows or something, which I wouldn't be able to see anyway. But like interacting with chat. So that's why I didn't really stream online. I streamed the single player, which is a little bit different. Just Ate Made It Man said, "Can you cheat?" No. Or if you can, I don't know. We haven't figured it out yet. He also asked, "Can you send red shirts on away missions and just fly away? We all know they're already dead." I don't think there are anything where you beam people down. You do transport people away from places. You can transport people from ships and stuff, and you have to wait the minute for it to lock on and things like that. And Tiger Law said, "I saw a scenario where a sun went supernova, and you have to warp out of there before you get destroyed by it." And here's it: like you have to have teamwork. So like the way they do certain things is there's teamwork. So you have to your engineer has to set the ship into warp mode because it's usually in impulse mode. Give all power to the engines, and then the person who's doing the helm has to calculate the course, and then he has to steer the ship over to that course. Now, before you can go to warp, you have to charge up the warp coils. And charging up the warp coils takes 10 seconds. And then you have 30 seconds to enter warp before the warp coils eject themselves because it's dangerous. And then you have to wait once again. So you actually have like different people working together. So it's not just like the captain will say, "Okay, let's warp over there." Then the helm and the engineering have to work together to be able to get to that point. And you know, like the tactical person raises the shields, but the helm, the engineering person says how much power the shields get, and then also handles like who is repairing what. You have three repair crews, so as the ship gets damaged, they send things out. The reason I'm talking about this game is because, believe it or not, it's fantastic. It's kind of weird to kind of explain it. Having played Artemis, it's nothing I haven't seen before. But Artemis is best played in a group in person. Yes, you can play Artemis online with voice chat, but it's not the same. And I thought that this would also be not the same, but the addition of the gimmick, which everybody's going to call this a gimmick, so I'll go ahead and just say the G word right now. The gimmick is what sells it. The fact that you can look around and you can make eye contact with the other people you're playing with in VR, which Ubisoft has done before with Werewolves Within. I get that. But this is Star Trek. This is a better property than Star Trek or than Werewolf. The fact that you can do that and you're working together in a cooperative way to do something iconic like pilot the Enterprise, which is a lot of sci-fi geeks' dream, this is fantastic. And Breakman even says, "Nothing wrong with the gimmick as long as it's a good one." I think this is a good one. Got to realize, force feedback, rumble in a controller was also a gimmick when Nintendo put it in the Nintendo 64. Same with having an analog thumbstick. Those were both gimmicks. Touchscreen gaming was a gimmick. And for once now, this is not a Nintendo property. This is, you know, a lot of people will say, you know, this is kind of shoehorning VR in. I don't think Star Trek Bridge Crew would work as a monitor game. I mean, Artemis works, and it would probably work for some people, but the charm of Star Trek Bridge Crew is using the VR and looking other people in the eye. And I actually have a friend who has been kind of bullish on VR for a while because he had a VFX1 headset, VR headset in the 90s. So he had it. And he was playing Descent in VR in the 90s and getting sick. And so he has been extremely skeptical. But he also has an Artemis room in his house. He has an Artemis bridge set up in his house. I've been to Artemis parties at his house. He actually told me this week after watching it, he thinks the Star Trek Bridge Crew is going to be the game that brings him into VR. He thinks he's finally found the game that is not the same any other way but in VR. Tiger Claw says, "There are enough content in the game that has a lot of replayability. I read you could do missions that are randomly generated." I talked about those missions for about 5 minutes, but I'll go ahead and repeat. There is a campaign of a prologue and five chapters. And then there are procedurally generated missions that you can either take do on the Aegis, which is the ship that's in the campaign, or on the original series Enterprise, where apparently nothing is labeled. I haven't played anything on the Enterprise, but they've got that there. And maybe eventually they'll add in other bridges. I don't know. And Breakman says, it sounds like the only thing that could ruin this game is other gamers. And that's kind of the big worry when you have a game that's so reliant on this. And also because, like, I haven't figured out the Ubisoft Friends system yet. Like, I don't know how to add a friend to my Ubisoft, to my Star Trek Bridge Crew friend list, because they use Uplay, which is how you can be, you know, have everybody that's using, like, I could play with people on PSVR. But the only way I learn how to add someone is by already playing with them, and then I can add them to my friends list. And Dungeon Bus says there is a random mission generator, but from what I've seen, the types of missions are kind of limited. But, well, what they do is they say, hey, you know, they've got a bunch of scenarios, like a bunch of events, and they randomly throw those events in. So if you say, I want a science mission, it's going to pull from the science events if you want. But it's, you know, it's basically like, what type of thing do you want to do today? And Tiger Claw says, it's a game where you can probably get the community to play together, especially if it's a community who are Star Trek fans and totally get it. And that's kind of what Artemis has as well. But that's, you know, you're going to find that this is probably going to get a bigger community because it does actually have the Star Trek license, where Artemis pretty much was the Star Trek game without the Star Trek license. And Fluke says, random players for me have been shockingly decent people so far, apart from the drunk Scottish guy. Yeah, and they have been for me, too. I was very, and one of them was called Killer Mike, and I'm like, oh, God. And he was actually the Twitch streamer. And it was like, and it was just everybody was cool, and everybody was helping out each other and everything like that. Raginator asks, any Kobayashi Maru type missions? Do you guys not even listen to the show? Because I already mentioned literally the prologue is the Kobayashi Maru. Like, they even call it the Kobayashi Maru. It ends the exact same way as the Kobayashi. Like, it is lifted straight from the movie. And it's the prologue. So I don't want to spoil it for you, but I just did. It's the prologue. I don't know what happens in Chapter 5. So if you have VR and you have an inkling of liking Star Trek, this is fantastic. I wish it had a little bit better friends management. Because I don't know how to add someone. I am Bobby Black Wolf, which is one word, on Uplay. I don't know if you can just like randomly add me into there. It does not work with your Steam friends list. I'm pretty sure it doesn't work with your PS4 friends list. Once you're in the Uplay universe, which means you can run with anything. And actually, people would actually ask, you know, okay, so what are you? Okay, you're on Rift, you're on Vive, you're on PSVR, things like that, when you would be in the thing. It would be in the briefing room. Yeah, Dungeon Buster says, there was another stream I watched where the captain was super laid back and gave orders like, okay, guys, let's just fly towards the nearest thing. All right, Captain, flying towards the nearest thing. Yes. It's pretty chill. I mean, also, you got to realize, like, the barrier to entry, the cost of entry to this game is pretty high. So, you know, it's that weeds out some of the people, but you're still going to get some jerks and just, you know, hope you don't get that jerk and then just kick them and go on with your life. SJ Wonder Matt said, I would pay money to see Travis Donovan play this. Except I'm not sure how he feels about VR. But yes, it is it's a lot of fun, and I would stream it online, but really I kind of want to do it with like maybe members of the community, so like I can like read Twitch chat and I'm not annoying someone online, someone in the group who's not, doesn't give a crap that I'm on Twitch, that I'm like talking to Twitch chat. And we can do something with that. I know that there's a couple people in our community that have this, and I don't know if it's something we can work out, and I can stream it on Twitch. Now, the single player, let me talk about the single player real quick, because I've been like teasing the single player version. They added the single player at the very end. What the single player allows you to do is you can do all the stuff I mentioned all by yourself. So you start off in the captain's chair, but you can actually give orders to people. So you can say, you highlight something on the map in your captain's chair and you can say, go to warp. And then all that stuff will happen. Or you can actually you can take over. You can basically get up from the captain's chair and sit in the helmsman and you can fly the ship yourself. So I actually did that. I actually played, when I did the prologue, I actually played pretty much the whole prologue, not giving orders, but just jumping between everybody. And I put that on, I did that on Twitch. And so there's an archive of it. So you can actually go over to the helmsman, set the course, run over to engineering, set the power, turn on the warp, and then, you know, warp and, you know, impulse and do all that stuff. So you can do all that And you can fire and all that stuff, or you can actually just sit back and give the orders and have the AI deal with it. Sometimes the AI might not be the best at doing things, like especially like if you're trying to avoid mines in a minefield. The AI helmsman is not necessarily going to do that. They're just going to go straight from point A to point B. So you're going to want to take over and avoid the minefield. But for a lot of things, it's a lot easier, and you can still experience the story, and you can do everything, including those procedural generated missions, offline, single player, playing as everybody. SJ Wonder Matt says, I remember Travis saying when this was announced he thought it was gimmicky as hell and wasn't impressed. I think if he saw Bobby's video and heard his review on it, he would change his tune. I don't know. Travis, I would love for Travis to try it at some point, but I'm not going to push him towards it because it is VR, and a lot of people still have that stigma about VR. And Fluke does say they're adding full voice command support at some point in the future. Will be interesting how well it works. They're actually using IBM's Watson for that. So they're actually going to be using some really high-end processing for those voice commands. So that's going to be it's a lot of fun. To register participation for this week's episode of the Bobby Blackwell Show on VogNetwork.com, use the passphrase "racing," and that will work for 2 weeks. So the other thing that I wanted to talk about, and I talk a lot about Star Trek Bridge Crew, is a very important piece of my past was relaunched this weekend. And I did a Twitch stream on it Friday night. It was relaunched on Friday night, and it's for the Commodore 64. And Dungeon Buster, just going back to the last topic, I heard the Vive will be getting the Bridge Crew as a pack-in during June. I think the Vive is getting relaunched with Star Trek Bridge Crew as a pack-in. Job Simulator was the pack-in. I think now it's being rotated out for Star Trek Bridge Crew, which is totally worth it. So the world's first MMO, the world's first virtual MMO, was actually created in the mid-1980s. It was created for the Commodore 64. It was created by Lucasfilm Games. Same people who later did Maniac Mansion, Day of the Tentacle, Grim Fandango, Monkey Island, yada, yada, yada. It's called Habitat, is what it was called. I didn't play it when it was called Habitat. I played it on the Quantum Link service, or Q-Link, which later became America Online, or AOL, which then was bought by Time Warner, blah, blah, blah. And it was called Club Caribe, because it was basically Habitat without the mystical elements that originally made Habitat. The reason it's come back is the original creators, which turns out to be like some really like huge names in like the online, like the JavaScript world today. Like if you're a JavaScript developer, if like you're a web developer, if I say the name Doug Crockford, you better say, yes, I have his book, JavaScript, The Good Parts, on my shelf. If not, I'm not going to say you're a terrible JavaScript developer, but you could be better if you had his book on your shelf. Douglas Crockford developed Habitat. He worked for Lucasfilm Games in the 1980s and helped develop Habitat, which was the first virtual MMO, first graphical MMO. He's actually been developing it like 8 or 9 times. Deft asked, Caribe or Caribe? Caribe. It was pronounced Club Caribe, but it's spelled like it would be Club Caribe. So it is Caribe. But it's actually pronounced Club Caribe. And they created Habitat, him and another person by the name of Randy Farmer, and I can't remember, Clay, I think it's Clay something. I really should have written down the names. I apologize. But they created this back in the 80s, and nobody really understood what they were trying to do. I mean, today it's like, you know, okay, yeah, it's an MMO and stuff. But they made it for the Commodore 64, and what they actually were able to get, they were able to recreate the server using modern technology, because they have recreated the Habitat server like 8 or 9 times. They were able to recreate the server in Java and JavaScript. You can actually, they've open sourced it. It's on GitHub. You can run it as a Docker instance. So like I said, modern technology. But they were able to get it to work with the original Commodore 64 client. And they relaunched their main server. It was done by The Maid, which now has the rights, which is the Museum of... I forget what the A, but it's the Museum of something and Digital Entertainment. So it's like a video game museum. It's out in Oakland, California, and they had a launch party Friday night. They actually have been funding and basically preserving as a museum. This is the first virtual MMO. And they relaunched it, and they actually have a zip file that you can download that has a prepackaged version of Vice, the Commodore 64 emulator, that's already set up to connect to the server, and it even has some hotkeys to like swap disks and stuff, and they let you go back through the original habitat. They recreated the original habitat worlds and a lot of the screens and everything, and it was a really neat look down memory lane. Right after they went off the air, I went on Twitch and toured this world. I decided I was going to try to get this to work because I played this in the early 90s, probably 1990 or 1991. I don't remember exactly when. I was a young kid. I know I'm dating myself. I know I say I'm 29 and it was over 29 years ago. Let's just go with it. And I went around and I played this game, and the thing was it was on Quantum Link. And early AOL had this too, but they had things called plus charges. What a plus charge was there were plus services and premium services. So usually you would pay like $19.95 a month or something for the service, and you would be able to get all the stuff that's part of the basic package. And then you would get 10 free hours of plus time to use their plus services, which was probably, you know, chat rooms and basically the stuff you'd really want to use Q-Link for. Well, let's just say I played Club Caribe for about a month, maybe a month and a half. The reason I only played it for a month or a month and a half is because my parents got the bill. I racked up $400, over $400, in plus charges. Now, to give you a little bit of background, plus charges, I thought it was 8 cents a minute. No, it was 6 cents a minute. So I went over the 10 hours, and then I spent 6 cents a minute up to $400 in 1 month playing Club Caribe. Needless to say, it got canceled by my parents. I was grounded. I'm probably still grounded. I don't know. And I never got to play it again. I didn't even get to say goodbye to anybody. Breakman says, Bobby is lucky to be alive. His parents are very forgiving. My dad was on CompuServe, which also had plus minutes. He just never spent $400. So he understood the allure, but they did punish me. And I actually think that's why I never got a Roland MT-32, because I probably spent all the money they would have spent on a Roland MT-32 for me paying for these plus charges on Q-Link. SJ Wonder Matt says, Bobby was overcharging parents' phone bills before it was cool and before kids overcharged data cell plans. That's right. I didn't do that much long distance stuff because I did call the Sierra BBS, which was in Corso, California, to like download Sierra demos and stuff. But no, I would never like. But this was not long distance, so I didn't think I needed to get permission. And so, yeah, but it was made a very big mark on me just being in there for that month. It had a functioning economy, and I even wrote a book. Because you could, write on paper and stuff, and, you could actually, send them and get published, and then you could actually get royalties, and that would allow you to buy things like new heads and things like that. So I actually went on – I'm going to link it in the episode comments, the YouTube of that. And actually right at the very end of that stream, Randy Farmer, who was the guy who was in Oakland, he was talking all about it, and I was, repeating all his stuff. He came into the chat because his wife had apparently seen it. And I don't fanboy often, but I totally did. And it was not pretty. It was not professional at all. And I asked him to come on the show. So sometime after E3, he's actually going to come on the show. And we're going to talk about the world's first MMO and how, you know, he helped kind of it grew. It became Fujitsu, I think, bought it and became Worlds Away. Same type of code. And he says they've actually rewritten the Habitat server like 8 or 9 times. And so what's currently the Neo Habitat server is actually like the 9th generation of the original Habitat server that was running in the 80s. So, So if you want to find out more about it, neohabitat.org. And you can actually download the special Vice emulator and connect and go in there and actually see. And they've even converted HTML, the original docs for it, so you can learn how to play. And you can try out the world's first virtual MMO ever right now. I'm going to take a quick music break because I am coughing a little bit, so I need to stop for a little bit. And then we'll take like one or two calls or something, and then talk and maybe, you know, talk to OLR about what may happen at E3 next week, because E3 is coming up soon, and I didn't talk about it at all. It was weird. You're participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show here on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com.
This is Professor Shy Guy participating with the Bobby Blackwell Show.
Professor Shy Guy is going to be at Southern Fried Game Room Expo along with Super Guitar Bros and I think some other people. So, yeah, they're actually having concerts, and you can go see him live and hear him sing live. I guess what is he doing now? He actually sang the outro to the American version of the new Dragon Ball Z cartoon, I think. Yeah, so he's moving on up. We had him on the show when nobody knew who he was. Now he hasn't returned my calls, but I'll get to talk to him next week. If you want to leave a bumper, you do not have to be Professor Shy Guy or singing in the Dragon Ball Super's outro. That's what it is, I believe. Dark Soccer just yelled that in chat. You can just be you and leave me a bumper with just your voice and an MP3 file to bumpers at BobbyBlackWolf.com, or you can call the toll-free number, which I'm about to open, Bobby Blackwolf Show on Skype. The toll-free number is 1-888-36-GAME-1. That is toll-free in North America. The story I cut tonight, because I talked a little bit too long about Star Trek Bridge Crew, which is totally fine. It was totally worth it. Was that the Steam Direct, Steam has now announced that game developers can release their game on Steam for $100. They were going to go anywhere between $100 and $5,000 as a refundable. So if you make $100 worth of sales, you get that back. But you have to put that down as a deposit. And which means now I can release Flappy Vog on Steam for $100. And I might lose that $100 because none of you are going to buy it. But I can actually now do that. And I can put my own shovelware on Steam. What I'm actually going to do is I'm going to take a multitasking, which is by a developer who does not listen to my show, but he does listen to OLR, so he's not going to hear this. I'm going to actually make multitasking, and I'm going to release it on Steam before he does. And people in chat are talking about like having a game jam or something about, but they're like, well, we can't have another game jam because people haven't finished their games. I don't care if people who never finished their games from the last game jam, like the last game jam was 2 years ago. So if you haven't finished a game from the last game jam 2 years ago, I'm sorry. I don't care. So Tiger Claw says, for people asking if you can buy a VR headset with the Star Trek Bridge Crew bundle, you can. HTC Vives is selling it with the bundle to the game. And yes, that's the new bundle. HTC Vives came with originally when I got it was like Job Simulator and Tilt Brush by Google. And now I think they're bundling it with Star Trek Bridge Crew, which I think it's great. I think that's a great idea because this is the game people are going to want anyway. It's still $800, but it's great anyway. We do have a call here on the line, so we're going to go ahead and grab it. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
Hey, this is Guy Judo.
Guy Judo, what's up, man?
Not much. I haven't been able to hear what you said much. Have you spoken? I'm pretty sure you spoke about Star Trek Bridge Crew, right?
I spent about 25 minutes speaking about Star Trek Bridge Crew.
Yeah, I love that game. It is such a fun game. I've been playing it all weekend since I got the thing. And, I'm just really impressed. Like, I was a little afraid because, you know, we spoke about it before. And you mentioned that it was going to be like Artemis Light.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but for me, it doesn't feel like Artemis Light at all. Like, it feels almost as in-depth as Artemis. You know, my mind is the fact that you can have more ships in that game and that type of thing. But
Artemis has a few other, like, you have a communication station, you can have, like, jet fighters on the side. So it is kind of a simplified Artemis in the sense that there's only four stations.
Right.
But you can still do a lot of stuff in those four stations.
Yeah, and the other thing I was trying to figure out, me and my crew, because I was playing with a couple. I've been playing with random people. I've only played with, like, one friend. Like, I know one friend that has the game, and we played on Saturday night, and that was fun. Mm-hmm. But I was playing with these random people, and I mentioned how in Artemis, because they were trying to, like, really, like, save our weapons. Like, I was the weapons guy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were like, yeah, you want to hold on to those torpedoes. Don't just go fire them off, whatever. And I'm like, I know in Artemis, I'm like, you can fly to the stations and you can pick up more stuff. And they don't have – do they have that in Star Trek or no?
No, because that's what the communication person does. in Artemis. Right. Is the communication will then contact them and say, hey, give us, like, we need nukes and stuff like that. And then the Starbase will say, okay, they're ready. And so you have to actually go and pick them up, and that's how you resupply. So they cut that part out.
Yeah, because, I mean, we do have communications in the game, though. You have the AI.
Right.
Doing the, and the captain has some communication stuff.
Yeah, they can.
Well.
The captain can answer a hail.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, the communications in Artemis, the communications person can even, like, insult the enemy ships.
Yeah.
Because it gets them riled up, and so they're not as focused, and so they're easier to kill.
Yeah, I've been known to tell off a couple of aliens myself. Mm-hmm. It's fun. but just all around impressive game. We did run into, like, some bugs. Like, I don't know if you encountered the bug where you go through the you warp, but, like, you just warp, like, forever.
No, I hadn't run into that yet.
Yeah, we went into that and ghost ships. Ghost ships are fun, though. It's a bug that's actually fun because you're out there. The communications AI is like, oh, they're following us. You know, they're firing on us. And we're just, like, looking at the monitor like, nope, there's nothing. And then you go to, like, the outside view. You look around. No, there's no ships around here. What are you talking about?
That is the thing I forgot to mention. I totally forgot to mention there is an outside view. Which is fantastic, and you're not moving around. You're sitting, like, it's basically as if you were sitting on top of the starship.
So it's
not like hurting locomotion or anything like that because you're still, like, sitting. But you can actually look all around, and you can even, like, watch the other ships that you're firing on. It's really cool when you're, like, an impulse, and, like, all the stars and all the planets are coming by you and everything.
Yeah, like, I went out on that Saturday night. I went to take a look outside. And I didn't realize how big those asteroids look up close. Mm-hmm. And I dropped a few F-bombs. I went to look out, and this big asteroid was just, like, right in my face. And I'm just like, whoa, whatever. But one of the things I wanted to mention was you're talking about the view. And have you seen that area where, like, I call it Stonehenge in space. Like, we found some area where it's just, like, these long pillars. They look like the stones of Stonehenge. And they're just out there in this, like, purple, like, nebula.
No, I haven't.
Have you seen it? Oh, it's beautiful, man. Like, I sat on top of the I did the outside view for, like, the entire trip. I just kept looking. I was supposed to be watching weapons, but I'm just, like, out there just looking at the view. Like, I can't believe this. This is – it felt great, man. And was on the PlayStation 2, so I could imagine on the PC. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's a lot of fun. Have you figured – like, can you add someone that you haven't played with yet through Uplay?
No, as far as I know, I don't think I could do that. But I'm using PlayStation 2. Maybe you could do it with the PC. But it was like that with Werewolves.
Yeah. I'd like to, like, add you as a friend, and then we could do, you know, friend missions. But, like, I think I have to play a game with you first, which seems
probably
counterintuitive. This is why I don't like Uplay.
Yeah.
And you kept telling me, oh, it's fine. I haven't had any problems with it. I'm like, no, there's a problem with it.
Well, if you want, we could coordinate. Tonight I could just, like, make a room, you can join it, and then you could add me as a friend and just leave. Like, we don't play the game, but just to add each other.
No, I don't think it'll, because it jumps you in a random room.
It does? I thought you could create a room. I thought, because I know.
Yeah, but then how am I going to invite you to my room if we're not already friends?
I thought it was like a list. I thought you could look at, like, a room list. They don't have that?
I don't know. I haven't looked.
Because I know my friend, she set up the room. She was like, oh, I'm going to set up the room. And, you know, just people came in, like, they were able to find her room. But maybe it was a random room.
Fluke,
I just assumed that it was a list that they were looking at.
Fluke says you can add someone via Uplay and they'll show up in the game without playing them first. I've done it and it works. I trust Fluke. Right. Fluke says it's possible. Then it's possible.
My name is Foulmouth Elmo. Look for me on there.
All right. I'm Bobby Blackman.
I'll probably find you before you find me.
All right.
All right, awesome. Man. Great show.
Thank you, man.
I'll be listening.
All right. So that's it. That was the call that we're going to take tonight. Coming up next here on the Voice Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com is Orange Lounge Radio. It's three people out in Sacramento, California. They talk about games for much, much longer than I do. And they're actually going to talk about news this week. Sacramento, you guys there?
We're here, Bobby. How are you?
I'm doing well. So Steam is going to let me create multitasking and put it on Steam for $100.
I was just about to say the launch of a years-old MMO is not news.
Yes.
Bobby Black. You talked about news tonight.
Yes, but it was more personal. It was a personal story.
No, that is awesome, and I thought that was awesome that the creator jumped in your stream. I left because I was multitasking myself that day, so I left, and so I didn't see that whole thing. But that is That is awesome.
And he did agree, and he even like even reiterated it on Facebook. He's like, yeah, we'll have to work on this after, you know, because I said after E3.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I'll come on.
I wonder if they're doing something with E3. E3 doesn't usually get into the retro stuff.
It's more, I said it because I knew we would want to talk about E3.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
I didn't want to put him on like when we're like, okay, E3 just happened, and now we're going to talk about a 30-year-old game.
Good point. Yeah, I'm having to bump guests out to July right now because between E3 and the anniversary show, we're full right now in June. But tonight, funny enough, since you brought it up, YYR is joining us, and we're going to get an update on multitasking. I don't know if you knew that, but...
I did, which is why I'm telling you that I'm working on my version of multitasking. And if all I need is $100, and I can put it on Steam.
All I need is $100. I don't know. I think there's the fans are demanding Flappy Vog first.
The fan. Singular.
The fan.
The singular. So like, that was kind of the thing. Like the $100 for Steam Direct.
Mm-hmm.
That seems like, to me, it seems a little low.
It does.
Because it is $100 per game, whereas Steam Greenlight was $100 for you, and then you could put as many games on Steam as what you want. But people who make shovelware, $100 is nothing.
Yeah, $100 is nothing. So it's really going to be about how do they curate games, I think. Because I think Steam kind of admitted that they have a problem, that their store it's not very navigatable anymore. Like, it's just because I think of all that stuff in there, and then it's like, we're going to have algorithms for everything. And games you might like, and curators. And I think they confessed that they tried to launch the Steam curators so that they kind of wouldn't have to do it themselves. This is what I took from their little post about it all. But that might not really be working, so that they are going to have to curate things themselves a little more. And I think that probably will help a bit.
They are giving curators more tools.
That's good.
Because they did talk about that, about how, you know, yeah, we launched curators a little bit early. But now, you know, if you opt in, like if you like a specific curator, and they're even going to work with maybe getting curators early access to some of these games.
Mm.
And that way the curator can say, yes, this is good. And you know, actually work on that, because they said this used to be a human at Valve. We don't have the capacity for this anymore. So we need humans like you who maybe have different tastes than those of us at Valve.
Interesting.
So it's trying to get the free market to work.
But you know what? The Google Play Store and the iTunes Store are also full of crap apps all over the place, and they somehow work and have survived all these years. So
when I make my game, all y'all become curators and say it's great.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Why wouldn't we?
When I release multitasking on Steam. I'm going to do it. And it's going to have a VR mode and everything. Then I'm going to release a HoloLens version.
Imagine if instead of working against him, you worked with him.
Yeah, but he's
to create a VR version of multitasking.
All he needs to do is reach out.
Well, I'm hoping tonight we're going to get the update on what's going on with that. So originally he was going to be here in person, but due to some personal conflicts, he wasn't able to make it after all. But we thought, you know, let's go ahead and honor that, you know, we were going to catch up with him tonight. So
yeah, he needs to make it in Unity for me to be able to do it. Because if he makes it in XNA Game Maker, there's no VR mode for that.
I don't think this one is, but we'll ask.
Yes. And when we saw it at MAGFest, it was. It was XNA.
I think he confessed he had to, or was having to port it over, but I'll have to check. Because that might have been the poop game that he had to do that with, that I'm thinking now.
Yeah, the poop game, which is still on my Vita, that one is in Unity. He did that one in Unity.
Then I'm getting confused between those two. Yes, that was his first game in Unity. So
yeah, and then he made like a bug smashing thing for our game jam and then didn't submit it.
Don't.
YYR is my favorite person. That's why I'm giving him crap.
Well, we'll talk to him a little later on in about an hour.
So other than that, what else are you guys going to be talking about tonight? Because I mean, E3 is next week, and they're taking away part of your time.
It is. That's a little bit frustrating, but we always try to have as much fun as we can those weeks. So we'll kind of do our big predictions, because everybody loves predictions. That and more the what would you like to see out of E3, because I know Jamie isn't always big on predictions, but she might have some things she does want to see happen. So we'll talk a little bit about that.
An explosion.
An explosion of independent games everywhere. All right. And let's see, moving on to what else is in the news. PlayStation 3 production is ending in Japan. So that's, you know, the end of an era of sorts, although it's also kind of one of those, you know, oh, I thought this might have already happened already.
Yeah. Yeah.
We'll talk a little bit about Nintendo's online service. That's some right. details came out on that. Some interesting things have changed. Some big things have changed, if we're reading into everything correctly. So we'll talk about that a little bit. And then we might even recognize Metroid tonight because Nintendo consistently fails to do so.
I thought you said F-Zero.
There's that too, but tonight specifically we have something on Metroid.
All right. Orange Lounge Radio is up next. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you as always, Bobby.
So that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night on the eve of E3, right after the Southern Fried Game Room Expo, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, right here on the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com. Catch us live and interact with the show directly. You can leave me a voicemail on any topic or leave a bumper for using the show on the toll-free number 1-888-36-GAME-1. You can email me an MP3 to bumpers@BobbyBlackWolf.com. Facebook.com/BobbyBlackWolf and Twitter @BobbyBlackWolf is where you will find I will post things about what streams I do, because I have actually figured out how to do some Twitch streaming in VR or Commodore 64, and I'm streaming stuff that not a lot of people are streaming, which is why I get like 5 or 6 amazing viewers and not much else. But you can find out more there. Twitch.tv, Bobby Blackwolf. I should probably add that in there. Twitch.tv/Bobby Blackwolf. That is also me. You can submit feedback on the episode page here at VogNetwork.com. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone the show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet. But we would not be able to make the live show work without the help of our wonderful chatters. So thank you so much, Dark Soccer, Dark Titsia, Ronma, Rob Roberts, Burr, Doomplague, Fifth Dream, Havoc978, JD, Shadow Next Gen, Tiger Claw, Loki, Beam Me Up Man, Bull, Brad from Pod Culture, DeBlue Guy, Act Deft, Dungeon Buster, Ebony, Eric RPG, Fluke, Kaijudo, Kazan, MXC, MXT, Picardinator, Sean 8BitX, Spiffy, SJ Wonder Matt, VXJSnxV, and Wyland. So that is it for me. Maybe I'll see you in VR or in Commodore 64 land. Or somewhere, or at Southern Fried Game Room Expo next weekend, June 9th through 11th, Atlanta. You know you want to be there.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the VOG Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.